Ruptash v. Holder. Mr. Krauselman.
May it please the Court, my name is Matthew Krauselman and I represent the petitioner Helena Ruptash. Ms. Ruptash was placed in removal proceedings after filing an affirmative asylum application with the asylum office. She initially didn't believe that she'd be eligible for asylum, but she was informed by an unscrupulous document preparer that she could file it with his help. When she got to the interview, she realized after this person gave her asylum application, which had been filed, that he had changed a lot of the dates in her application, seemingly to fit her in under the asylum one-year bar.
The problem is when she eventually has her interview with the immigration officer, she doesn't fess up to this until she's really cornered with proof that she, in fact, had been in the United States much longer than that form said. She goes along with the story for a while.
That is correct, Your Honor. She did stay with the document examiners. She stayed with his story up until there was some inconsistencies whether she had applied for a Social Security number.
She's like presented with the Social Security card and an Illinois driver's license from years before 2000, 2001.
Yes, Your Honor, and that was played out in the asylum officer's notes, I believe, which are in the record.
Given the very fact-dependent discretionary nature of credibility findings, I'm having trouble seeing how the immigration judge couldn't quite rationally find that she's not credible and that she's not entitled to relief.
I think because after it was pointed out, she did explain through her testimony that she was scared of what that document preparer would do.
What compels him to believe that explanation? She's already proven that she'll lie about things, and we don't know that much about Mr. Vardan or whoever it was, or anything, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's really just based on her testimony that she was scared that, you know, that he would report her, that he would do something to her. That she testified before she went into that interview.
This is only because she thinks the Russian language interpreter is then going to go back and say something to Vardan?
Yes.
And he's not sitting in the room.
No, he's not. That's correct, Your Honor. But that, you know, she had undergone so much already based on what she did testify to, that she would be scared that something would happen to her. She knew that she was safe in the country at the time. It seems that before she went in, she saw that this had already been submitted to the government, so she was scared to go back and change her story based on something that had been submitted to the government. The immigration judge did note that her story, beyond the dates, her story did stay the same throughout the testimony. Even the story that was presented to the asylum office initially was the same as the story that she presented to the immigration judge and through her affidavits. Throughout the entire hearing. The only inconsistencies which the immigration judge noted were, you know, small inconsistencies besides the dates that she had presented initially, which she recanted during the asylum interview. The other inconsistencies which the immigration judge noted were inconsistencies that wouldn't go to the heart of her claim, even though under the Real ID Act, the immigration judge is able to look at inconsistencies that don't go to the heart of the claim, they still need to be material inconsistencies. So the inconsistencies the immigration judge noted were that it were an address issue. It was an address in Sacramento that she stated that she did never live in.
That is not unrelated because she's really trying to muddy the record about where was she, how long has she been places, was she really in California, was she not? And that actually all ties back to this Vardan stuff, although obviously Sacramento is not around the corner from L.A., but it's, if the IJ doesn't think somebody's credible, how are we to override that? Where's the error that we're correcting?
Well, I believe one of the things that the immigration judge didn't look at is her demeanor in answering questions during the testimony. That's something that obviously...
How do you avoid looking at her demeanor? I mean, he doesn't have a sentence, maybe, I looked at her demeanor, but surely she's there in the room.
But she didn't mention it in her finding, in the decision for the immigration judge. It's something that obviously this court can't even review because she didn't mention the demeanor at all. She just went towards the inconsistencies. Additionally, she submitted many documents, which were from people in the Ukraine, as well as a document from the Constitutional Court.
Right. Now, the government, on the demeanor point, has submitted this supplemental authority, our recent decision, the Bodie against Holder case, saying that the list of things in 1129 AC4C is permissive. So there isn't any obligation to consider demeanor. Demeanor can be misunderstood, by the way, especially in a cross-cultural context.
Yeah, and that's correct, Your Honor.
It's
in terms of
the least reliable indicator of credibility.
The demeanor?
Yes.
Yeah, it is something that could also be looked at. And the immigration judge is required to look at the totality of the circumstances, at everything that's presented to them in this point. And she didn't look at everything that was presented.
But you're saying that there was a legal requirement to consider demeanor, and we just said there isn't. We said it's among those things that if it's helpful, it can be done. But
What I'm arguing is that it's within the totality of the circumstances that the immigration judge is supposed to look at. It's something that can be looked at. She didn't look at it, and that was one of her...
In this area, I'm a little puzzled. I don't know how a trial judge can make an assessment of credibility without implicitly looking at demeanor.
And I agree with you, Your Honor.
So once you make the credibility finding, isn't the demeanor issue subsumed into that? In other words, it would have to be somehow separated out, and I have a real problem in seeing how once we get a credibility issue presented to us that we somehow have teased out demeanor.
Well,
require it a specific finding. Like, if you say, well, I find the person credible, or I find a person not credible, well, either way, what would you have the IJ in this case say about demeanor?
Other immigration judges in their decisions will note they testified clearly, they answered questions when asked of them.
Right. But this is an area where many times we have folks that aren't comfortable with language and the like, and unless something like that percolates up in a case, which I'm not sure we have here, I just don't know how we focus on demeanor apart from the basic credibility finding.
Yeah. Well, it's part of the totality of the circumstances, and what I'm stating is that this is just one thing that the judge didn't look at, which could have helped the petitioner through her testimony that she gave.
The likelihood of a remand to this IJ about demeanor would result in what, in your judgment?
Well, it may result in just a re-review of all the evidence of how she testified in court that day. It is on the record. The immigration judge proceedings are recorded, so it's an oral testimony. Beyond the demeanor issue, she also brought in other evidence to collaborate, other documentary evidence. That evidence was sent into the forensic document laboratory to check to see its validity for the FBI, and she actually continued the case a number of times in order to have those documents validated. They came back inconclusive, meaning there was no finding whether they were fraudulent or not. The immigration judge could have used that. You know, she could have used those documents and the fact that she submitted documents that the FBI stated weren't fraudulent in order to help her testimony, and she didn't find that.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Ms. Morton.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Carmel Morgan on behalf of the respondent, the U.S. Attorney General. Good afternoon. I was going to look.
That's why I said you just
made it. Okay. The court should deny the petition for review in this case because substantial evidence supports the agency's determination that the petitioner was not credible. It's undisputed that the petitioner in this case, 6 years after her illegal entry into the United States, filed an asylum application that was replete with lies. She repeated these lies under oath before an asylum officer and only corrected those portions that were directly refuted by the evidence that the asylum officer presented.
What other lies were left over that weren't corrected?
Two come to mind. First of all, her address. She claims that she didn't review, I think, the I-589 asylum application itself, that she had signed a blank form.
Did that have the Sacramento address on it?
It did have a Sacramento address on it. However, she admits that she reviewed the typewritten statement in English, which said that her husband and her son were living in Russia and that her daughter had never met her father. Those are things that later she admits were not true. She filed, subsequent to the asylum interview, a letter with the immigration court stating that she moved from the Sacramento address to an address in Illinois on February 10th, and that it was going to be a hardship to travel because there was no one to care for her child. It would appear that she was, again, misrepresenting not only her address, but the fact that her husband was in the country. I think presumably he's
in the country illegally as well, or is that not so?
Yes, she admits that he came through the same route that she did, illegally through Mexico, right, in 1999, about 6 months prior to her arrival. Mm-hmm. That's another misrepresentation in the statement that was submitted with her asylum application. She states that her husband told her to please go first and that she was the first to enter the United States, when in fact we later find out that he entered before she did.
Mm-hmm. Does the record show anything about her English language competence?
She admits that she reads English, and if she was going to be believable, her defense that she repeated the lies because Vardan had threatened her, she would have had to have understood the statement she read before the asylum interview because it was only in English.
So there was never a moment where the interpreter just read it to her in Russian or anything, or Ukrainian or whatever.
During the asylum interview, the asylum officer did ask, was your application read to you in your native language? And she answers that question with a yes.
So maybe not right there, but she's telling you that perhaps someone who's capable of interpreting from English into Russian may have read it to her in Russian.
She does say that, yeah, before the asylum officer.
I mean, Russian, I assume, is her language, given all of this, not Ukrainian.
She appears to speak both. I can tell from the record, yeah, they had some disputes about an interpreter at one point in time, mm-hmm, that she does speak both. And according to the country reports, that's not uncommon in Ukraine for people.
Well, they're actually very close.
Correct. I'm glad that you brought to Petitioner's Counsel's attention the 28J letter that I filed. I do think that blows his claim out of the water with regard to the immigration judge being required to address demeanor. I'd be happy to address further questions, but I think it's completely unnecessary and consistent with Bodhi that, again, that type of review for adverse credibility, you're considering a number of different factors, but there's no requirement on the record that you address each and every one specifically. And both the immigration judge and the board are very careful to use the word totality of the circumstances in explaining what they reviewed. So I think that's really a non-issue in this case. I think the key to this case really is the standard of review. And in an adverse credibility case, that standard is substantial evidence, which means that you would have to find that no reasonable fact finder could conclude that she was not credible. And given the fact that she admitted lying under oath and continued lies after that point in time, I think it's not surprising and not unreasonable for an immigration judge and the board to agree that she hadn't met her burden of proof because she didn't show that she gave credible testimony. I don't want to belabor this point a great deal. Under the circumstances in this case and with the arguments in my brief, I think the evidence is pretty clear that it supports the adverse credibility determination, but I'd be happy to address any further questions if you have them.
Apparently not. Thank you, Ms. Moran.
Thank you.
Mr. Graslin?
No further questions.
All right. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will proceed.